The Chinese Gunman by J.R. Roberts. Narrated by Barry Campbell. Chapter 1. There was a slight breeze blowing, and the man with the rope around his neck, hanging from the tree, turned slowly with it, first right, then left, then right again. He wasn't a big man, and he moved easily in the breeze. I admit I watched him for a few moments in morbid fascination, although it certainly was not the first time I had seen a hanged man. In 18 years as a lawman, I had seen many men hanged, and had brought many of them to the gallows or the hanging tree myself. I'd also had substantial experience cutting men down afterward, so I had no difficulty with this one, especially since he turned out to be even smaller than I had first thought. I didn't realize he was an Oriental until I had him down and saw his face. It was swollen, bloated, and blue, because the poor devil's neck hadn't broken, which would have given him a quick death. Instead, he had suffocated, a horrible way to die. Still, his features remained recognizable, and I was further surprised because his clothing was Western. In fact, he was dressed like a cowhand, which was stranger still. I put his body in the back of my wagon and continued on the road into the town of Black Wind, Arizona. Once in town, I'd find the sheriff's office and dump the body in his lap. There was still too much lawman in me just to leave the body dangling there, I guess, even though it was none of my business. I'd regret that decision soon enough, though I didn't know it then. Hell, even if I had known it, I probably still would have cut him down. I guess the whole thing was my own fault from the start. I had come into Arizona from San Francisco, having left behind a dead man and a couple of very live, very beautiful women. I had had no previous intention of stopping in Black Wind for anything more than a drink and a night's rest. Even after finding the body and cutting it down, I had no thought of staying any longer than that. Once in town, I immediately sought out the livery to put up my team and wagon. I would keep Duke and let him carry the body to the sheriff's office. That's what he got for being a beast of burden, and since I was the biggest burden he'd ever had to bear, the body of the dead Chinese man would pose no problem for him. The liveryman took my money in advance and gave me directions to the sheriff's office, the saloon, and the hotel, unfortunately in that order. I told him I would be bringing Duke back after I made a delivery. He watched wide-eyed as I removed the body from the back of my wagon and threw it over my saddle. Without pausing to explain, I started walking away, leading Duke behind me, following his directions to the sheriff's office. I attracted quite a bit of attention walking through town that way, and a few men even approached Duke to see who the body was. They didn't seem too upset when they discovered that it was an Oriental. Me, I never held anything against people because they were different, either in color or beliefs. I'd known some good red men and some bad red men, some good whites and bad ones. I hadn't had much contact with yellow men, but I supposed the same could be said for them, too. When I reached the sheriff's office, there was a small parade following behind me. I tied Duke up outside and went on in. "Good afternoon, Sheriff," I said to the man behind the desk. He was about 45 or so and seemed to be a big man, although it was hard to judge since he didn't get up. His clothing was kind of worn, and the star on his chest had lost its shine some time ago. He had a craggy face with dark, bushy eyebrows and a long, sweeping mustache. "What can I do for you, mister?" he asked. "My name is Adams, Sheriff," I introduced myself, walking up to the edge of his desk. "I found a body hanging from a tree a few miles south of town," I told him, getting right to it. "I'd appreciate it if you'd take it off my hands." He frowned at me and asked, "You cut it down, did you? Brought it into town?" I got the uncomfortable feeling just then that he knew who I had slung over my saddle outside without me telling him. I did. I couldn't just leave him hanging there, swaying in the wind, could I? He frowned again, then stood up. He was a little taller than I was, but considerably heavier around the waist and stomach. His gun, hanging on his right hip, was just as worn as the rest of him. He walked to the window and looked outside at the crowd that was milling around Duke. Then he turned to me, looking as if his worst fears had been realized. "You couldn't just leave him where he was, huh?" he asked. No, Sheriff, I couldn't. All I want you to do is your job, man. Take the body. You trying to tell me my job, mister? He asked, narrowing his eyes at me. Somebody should, I answered. You don't seem to know just what to do. I waved my hand in the general direction of the body and said, Just have someone take him off my horse so I can be on my way. After that, I don't care what you do with him. Mister, you ain't made any friends bringing that Chinaman's body into this town, he told me. How'd you know he was a Chinaman? I asked. You can't see his face from here. You said, he began, but I cut him off. I didn't say anything about him being Chinese, I pointed out. All I said was that I found him hanging from a tree south of town. Seems to me maybe you already knew he was there. He walked up to me and poked me in the chest with his forefinger. Mister, the way I see it, nobody asked you to cut that Chinese down, and nobody asked you to bring him into town. Now, I don't want him, so as far as I'm concerned, he's all yours. Now get out of my office. I was about to argue when I realized I had nothing to argue about. If he didn't want the body, I couldn't make him take it. Oh, I could have dumped it right there in front of his office and forgotten about it, but it probably wouldn't have bothered him none to just leave it lay there. Me, it would have bothered, and he knew that, so he pretty much had things going his way. We stared at each other real mean for a couple of seconds, then I opened the door and stalked out of his office. As I was untying Duke, somebody in the small, curious crowd shouted out, Mister, you better get that yaller heathen out of this town real quick-like. I turned, but there was no way I could match the voice with a face. From the looks on their faces, though, I figured that whoever had spoken was probably speaking for the whole crowd. There was one man who did stand out from the crowd, though. He was a hard case, tall and thin, with a gun slung low on his left side. He was leaning against a post, real relaxed, just watching. Anybody want to give me directions to the undertakers? I asked. No answer. Do you even have an undertaker in this town? I tried again.
Not for dead Chinamen, a hidden voice answered.
I stood staring at them, wondering what I was going to do with a body that nobody wanted. I thought of several things I could have said to them, but decided against them. These folks seemed pretty much set in their ways, and it would take more than a few words from a stranger toting a dead Chinese to change their minds. I untied Duke, wheeled him around, and headed back to the livery.
Chapter 2.
Apparently, the livery man had not yet heard the news and was not aware of just whose body I had over my saddle. He was only too willing to give me directions to the undertaker. Once again, I was the center of attraction walking down the streets of Black Wind. When I reached the undertaker's office, I tied Duke outside and went on in.
"Can I help you, sir?" the man inside asked. He was a gnome with liquid eyes and a habit of rubbing his hands together as he spoke.
"I've got a body outside," I told him. "How much to bury him?"
"Unfortunate," he remarked. "A relative?"
"No, not a relative. How much?"
"Well, well," the man said,
rubbing his hands together and walking to the window to peer out. He spent a long time looking out that window, and I walked over to stand next to him, even though I was pretty sure I knew what he was seeing. The crowd had followed me from the sheriff's office, and right in front was that left-handed hard case. He was looking right through the window when the undertaker saw him. That did it.
"Well, well," the little man said again, but in a different tone of voice. "I'm afraid that right now I'm unavailable for, well, he said again, seeking refuge in a phrase he seemed to have mastered.
"What are you afraid of?" I asked him.
I am unavailable, he told me, then planted his feet and snapped, "I can't help you."
Following that, he retreated into a back room as if he'd frightened himself with his outburst. I went back to the window and peered out. No one was touching the body or the horse, but people had collected there, all but the left-handed gun, who stood apart, watching the door to the undertaker's office, and waiting for me to come out. I decided not to keep him waiting. When I stepped outside, all eyes fell on me, and then the left-handed gunman stepped up on the walkway and stood in front of me.
"Can I help you?" I asked him.
"Other way around," he said.
himself would like to see you. He thinks maybe he can help you, he said, then flicked his hand at the body and finished, with your problem.
Who is himself? I asked him.
I told you, he's the man that wants to help you with your problem, he repeated. He's probably the only one who can.
And I did need help unless I wanted to carry that body around until it began to rot.
Well, where is this Mr. Himself? I asked him.
Right this way. He's in his office.
I started to untie Duke, but he said, that'll be taken care of. Just follow me.
I followed him to Himself's office, which turned out to be the saloon. If he couldn't help me, at least I'd get a drink out of it.
Himself's office was a large table at the back of the saloon from where he could see everything that was going on. I followed his gunman right up to his table.
This is the man, Himself, he told his boss.
Himself looked me over, and I took the opportunity to do the same. He was a well-fed man of about 50 with a full black beard streaked with gray. He was dressed in a dark suit and a ruffled shirt like a gambler. He was toying with a deck of cards.
I'm called Himself, he told me, as if it explained everything.
Clint Adams.
I understand you have a problem, Mr. Adams. Perhaps I can help you.
I think this town has the problem, but I'd still be grateful for whatever help you can give me. I purposely did not use his adopted name.
As I understand it, you have a dead body you can't dispose of.
That about sums it up. How about taking it off my hands?
He laughed from deep inside his chest. I assure you, Mr. Adams, I have no need for a dead Chinaman.
What about a live one?
Even less, he admitted freely.
He was watching me for a reaction, but I didn't give him the satisfaction. I was aware of the gunman standing off to my left, and I guessed Himself was wearing a pistol in his shoulder holster. Shoulder holsters weren't very popular in the West, but guns are my business, and I recognized the bulge in his jacket.
How can you help me? I asked Himself.
Well, he said, leaning back, I could tell you where to take that body.
And where would that be?
Well, now, before I tell you that, we've got to work something out. I'll expect something in return for that information.
A trade.
Exactly.
What would I have to trade with? I asked.
Information.
What kind of information?
Lester, fetch Mr. Adams a chair and a drink, he told the left-handed gunny, and at that point I found out two things. Number one, I found out who the gunny was. His name was Les Taylor, and he had a reputation for being fast with a gun. Next, I found out how much power this man who called himself Himself had over Taylor. In all the years Les Taylor had been around, he'd killed many men for one simple reason. He'd killed them because they called him Lester. Now, here was this man, Himself, who not only called Taylor by his first name, but assigned him the menial task of fetching me a chair and a drink. And Taylor was doing it. He was either afraid of Himself, or he was being paid a hell of a lot of money. He came back with the chair and the drink, and I sat on one and drank the other. Taylor remained standing and stood to my left, which was odd. Being the gunman that he was, he should have been standing on my gun side, which is my right. Mr. Adams, here in Black Wind we are beset with a problem. There are some, undesirable factions who have moved into our community, and we are trying to persuade them to move out.
By hanging them? I asked.
He shook his head, annoyed. Some of us become overzealous at times. They do not act for all of us, I assure you.
But the problem is the Chinese, I prodded.
Yes, that I admit. There are a group of these people who have moved into a deserted ranch some miles southwest of town. They are making an absurd attempt at raising cattle. Can you imagine Chinese cowboys?
He shook his head and laughed. Some of the people in the saloon laughed with him. They also stopped when he stopped. I noticed that Les Taylor didn't laugh.
Could we get to the information you want? I asked.
Well, I could give you directions how to get out there, and you could bring them the body of their dead companion.
In return, I'd like to know just how many of them are out there and how well outfitted they are.
I see, I told him. You're planning a fight and you'd like to know what you're up against.
He swirled a liquid in his glass and told me, I was a captain in the Confederate Army, Mr. Adams, and I was good at what I did because I knew my enemy's capabilities.
He spread his hands, not spilling a drop of his drink, and said, This is no different.
The war's over, I reminded him.
For some of us, he replied.
I could just ride southwest and find them myself, I suggested.
He smiled and said, You'd never make it.
I was about to reply when someone came running into the saloon.
Some of them Chinese is riding into town.
Himself's eyes flicked from me to Taylor, and he said, Lester? Taylor started out of the saloon, and I rose to follow.
Your decision, Mr. Adams? He asked.
I think it's just been made for me, I told him, and went outside. The look on his face was not happy. Outside, I saw a buckboard coming down the street with three people in it. Two men, one young and one old, and a woman. The buckboard stopped at the sheriff's office. The younger man climbed down and helped the other two off. Les Taylor started over there and I followed, as did a small crowd of townspeople.
This is Ling,
I heard the young man tell the sheriff, who had come out of his office.
She is looking for her brother, who has been missing since last night.
So, the sheriff asked, what do you want me to do, go look for him? I wish you'd all disappear.
I do not understand,
the young man began to say, but at that point Taylor reached him and put a hand against his chest, shoving him against the buckboard.
Sheriff said he wants you to disappear, China boy, he said. I was you, I'd do like I was told.
The boy, I was close enough now to see that he wasn't much more than that, eyed Taylor with a mixture of fear and revulsion. It was the young girl, however, who spoke next.
Please, she said, touching Taylor's arm, I must find my brother.
He cut her off with a wicked backhand that sent her sprawling in the dirt with a cry.
Don't touch me, he shouted.
He took a step forward, and I knew he intended to kick her. The older man stepped in front of him, jabbering something in Chinese, and Taylor switched his attention to him. He drew a fist back, and I shouted his name before he could deliver the blow, which probably would have killed the old man.
Taylor!
He turned his head to the sound of my voice and had a wild-eyed look on his face. The crowd between us cleared away real quick. I watched his eyes. They'd tell me if he had any intentions of going for his gun. When I knew that he didn't, not at that point anyway, I put two and two together. Just as I knew him by name, he must have known me. That was why he hadn't stood on my gun side inside the saloon. You do that when you don't know anything about a man, so you can watch his hand. He hadn't had to do that because he knew something about me. That was also why he didn't draw on me.
This has nothing to do with you, Adams, he told me.
When I see a man hit a woman, Taylor, it automatically becomes my business. Behind him, the old man was helping the girl to her feet, and the young man slid along the buckboard until he was also standing with them. You know that if you go for your gun, I'm going to have to kill you, I told him, so it's your move. We stared at each other for a few seconds, and then he relaxed and gave me a tight smile.
When I get the word, Adams, it's going to be a pleasure to kill you.
We'll wait and see, Lester, I told him. His eyes went cold and he almost tensed up again, but thought better of it. I didn't want to push him any more. He might go for that gun in a blind rage. He turned to the three Chinese people and told them,
The sheriff can't help you, so just get out of town.
I stepped forward and told the girl, Maybe I can help you. Taylor threw me a look and said,
Himself ain't gonna like that.
You tell himself that the next time he wants to talk to me about anything, he better be ready to introduce himself by name and not some silly title. He stared at me a moment, then said,
I'll tell him,
and walked away.
How could you help? The younger man asked, stepping forward.
Are you related to this girl? I asked him.
I am a friend. Her brother is her only relative, he explained.
I pulled him to the side and told him, Have her stay here with the old man and then come with me. He nodded, went over to tell her.
He wasn't much taller than she was, and they were both larger than the old man. The girl was very pretty and couldn't have been much more than 19. The boy was about the same age, while the old man could have been anywhere from 50 to 80. As I led the boy to Duke, he barely reached my shoulder with the top of his head. Duke was tied up in front of the saloon, and I brought the boy over to him and showed him the body. He kept his face blank as he stepped forward and looked at the body's face. Then he stepped back, as if the flesh of the dead man's face had burned his fingers.
"It is Lee," he said. "Where did you find him?"
I explained where I found him and the condition of the body at that time. He looked into the sky and remarked,
"And so our number grows smaller still. I do not know why we even try to stay where we are not wanted."
I didn't have an answer for him, so I stayed quiet.
"Will you bring him to my wagon?" he asked.
"Of course." I untied Duke and we walked back to the buckboard. The crowd had thinned out some, but there were still a few stragglers. I lifted the body from my saddle and placed it in the buckboard, glad at last to be rid of it. The girl got in back with it, crying and speaking softly. The boy helped the old man into the front seat and then climbed up next to him.
"We thank you for your kindness," he told me. "Have you a place to stay?"
"I'm going over to the hotel now," I told him.
"I do not believe that they will give you a room. If you have difficulty, please come out and stay with us. You will be welcome."
He gave me instructions on how to get there, then said,
"My name is Kim Chang."
"Clint Adams."
"Again, Mr. Adams, we thank you."
"You're welcome." The older man spoke in Chinese, and Kim told me,
"My uncle wishes to thank you for keeping the man Taylor from striking him and Ling. He says you are a brave and good man."
I smiled at the old man, and he bowed his head and gave me a small smile.